Call to order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, February 12th, and we are doing a public hearing today on House Bill 5005, which is the Board of Chiropractic Examiners, and House Bill 5006, that is the fee bill related to the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. But before we open the public hearing, we have a couple of issues that Mr. Olson has researched for us on things that came up yesterday when we were discussing the bills that we had hearings on. Mr. Olson, can you bring forward the information that you've got for the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, good morning. A couple of items. There's been discussion throughout the budget hearings on these health-related licensing board regarding the fees charged for licenses and whether or not we can charge a higher fee for out-of-state licensure or not. And I mentioned to you yesterday that I thought that there was language in statute for most of these boards that required them to establish fees based on the cost of producing whatever license or document. And I went through some of the statutes. I didn't go through all of them for all the boards, but I have several here and thought I'd just share with you the language that's here. It says this is for the Veterinary Medical Examining Board, for instance. The fees and charges established under this section shall not exceed the cost of administering the regulatory program of the board pertaining to the purpose for which the fee or charge is established. So if the committee would like to recommend increasing fees, for instance, for out-of-state licensure, we would have to look at changing that statutory language.
And what is the statute number?
Well, this particular one is 686.255. And I have some others here.
So the statutes are pertaining singularly to each of the boards and commissions?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct. And I can give you statutory references to the ones that I have or the ones I can look up.
Why would each board have their own statute?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, these statutes get into practice, standards of practice and those kinds of issues, which are unique to that particular profession. And who they license and the duties of the different, for example, here, the duties that may be performed by veterinary technicians, those kinds of things. Those issues are addressed in statute as well. And I think, as I mentioned yesterday, I think the philosophy of the state, at least for 20 years that I've been familiar with it, is that you charge or you establish a fee based on what it costs to produce or provide that service or that license. And what I'm hearing from some of these boards is that it doesn't cost them any more to produce a license for somebody that lives out of state as it does to produce a license for those that live in state. So that's why I think we've seen the fees pretty much the same through these boards. But again, if it's the desire of the subcommittee to look at changing that, then we could proceed with that.
Well, you know, actually having statutes that are separate to each of the boards and commissions may end up being an interesting way to have things be, because then if they're in going through these budgets, if we find specific ones of these where it is appropriate to look at that issue differently, then actually changing the statute won't be nearly as complex.
That's very good. Thank you for your research. I appreciate that.
Representative March, you had a question.
Yeah, actually, and you probably shot down my thought.
Sorry.
But that was that, I mean, if there are common functions between these boards that, and we're repeating the same phrase or same paragraph in every statute, maybe there's one common statute we could do for certain administrative
functions. Keep that in mind as we go through this process,
yeah,
too.
Thank you.
I might also add, before we get too much farther in this, that Representative March was kind enough to supply us with donuts this morning. So,
oh dear,
be nice to him today.
That's why they let me sit here.
Yeah, it comes with a price.
Mr. Olson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Another item that we talked about yesterday with the board that was in front of us regarding pulling out from underneath the health division and the cash processes that they go through. And I'd mentioned to you that a couple of the boards did that last session, and I talked with one of those boards, the executive director of the Clinical Social Workers, Elizabeth Byes, who was here last week, and she told me that even before they came out from underneath the health division, they went to a lockbox service through U.S. Bank. She had nothing but good things to say about that. In their renewal notices that they send out, they send an envelope with the address for the lockbox service. The money goes directly to them with the application. They process it. They deposit the money in the bank. They have the checks and balances within their system. And then within 24 hours, the board gets a list of who paid, how much they paid, their license number, and then the licensing applications as well. And so they then turn around and within a matter of a day or two can issue a license. She says it's a much, much more efficient process, and it's expedited. And she believes, although she didn't have facts to back this up, she believes it's actually cheaper for them to pay the lockbox service than it was to pay the health division for their services as well. And in relationship to that, I had mentioned yesterday that I believe there were some bills that had been introduced to pull some other committee or some other boards out from under the health division. And House Bill 2241 is a bill that would remove the Veterinary Medical Examining Board from under the health division. And that is currently assigned to the Agricultural and Natural Resources Committee with a hearing and possible work session scheduled for tomorrow.
Does it have a key sponsor on it?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I don't have the bill in front of me, and I don't have that information, but I can find that for you. Okay. There's also a Senate bill, Senate Bill 203, that initially had done the same thing. However, the A. N. Gross version of the bill deleted the reference to the Department of Human Services, so I'm not sure what the bill does.
Oh.
And I didn't look that up. I was just provided this information this morning.
Great.
It would be interesting, I think, to kind of let the committee chairs of these bills reside know that we're working on these issues, and if they could stay in contact with us as the bills move through the process. But I don't want to get ahead of the commission either on making moves about how they operate. Any more
That's
information
it.
For us?
That's it for this morning.
What I'll do then is open a public hearing on House Bill 5005 and House Bill 5006. Mr. Olson, could you give us the Legislative Fiscal Office overview?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. This is the budget bill for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners and also the accompanying fee bill for the board. I'll talk about the fees in a moment. Like the other health-related boards, this board is also 100% other funded from licensing application fees. The governor's budget is an 8.4% increase over the legislatively adopted or approved budget for 0103. There were two budget notes contained in the budget from last session. One directed the Board of Chiropractic Examiners to look at their cash flow and any balance requirements and the possibility or feasibility of switching to a birth date renewal system that we've talked about before. The board will report on that budget note during the presentation today as required in the budget note. The second budget note directed the board to report to the emergency board no later than July 1st, 2002 on a couple of issues. One, the complaint and investigation backlog with specific reference to sexual misconduct cases. The board was also to report on the progress and development of and adoption of practice guidelines consistent with statutory requirements. And then finally, they were to use the Dispute Resolution Commission or other mediation services to address differences between the board and other professional organizations and other groups. And that report was provided to the emergency board at the June 2002 meeting on that budget note. There were no audit reports audits done in the last 2 years, nor interim reports or studies. The fee bill that you have before you today is a bill that ratifies fees that were increased during the last session. There are no new increases in this bill. These fee increases were discussed in great detail during the last Ways and Means subcommittee, and the level of the fee were moderated adjusted lower than what the board had actually come forward with based on the review by the subcommittee of Ways and Means. And so the fee bill today, again, just ratifies those fees. There are no new fee increases in that bill. Other than the report of the budget notes to the emergency board, there were no other appearances or requests of the emergency board. And again, like some of the other boards, this board continues to experience growth in the number of licensees they have.
Questions or comments from Mr. Olson? Thank you. Mr. McTeague and Mr. McCarthy and Mr. Patton, take it away.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dave McTeague, Executive Director for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Our offices are located in the Morrow Crane Building in South Salem, co-located with seven other licensing boards, an arrangement that we feel benefits of both our agency and all the boards in that building. With me to my right is Dr. Richard McCarthy, chiropractic physician from Cottage Grove and president of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. The Board of Chiropractic Examiners licenses and regulates 1,100 actively practicing chiropractors in Oregon, another 356 who hold inactive status, and we also license and certify over 577 chiropractic assistants who assist chiropractors in the area of physiotherapy, electrotherapy, and hydrotherapy. The primary program areas of the board are public protection. The mission of the board is to protect and benefit the public health and safety. The board is a policy governance board using the John Carver model of board governance. Our mission and our goals are laid out on the first page of the attachments, which I have provided you. Those are the guiding principles and the guiding goals and ends that this board seeks to achieve, the biggest mixing bowl of policies that we have. The primary program areas are public protection. This includes complaints, investigations, the peer review committee, contested case hearings, attorney general advice, negotiations for settlement on contested cases, and final disciplinary actions. It also includes the ongoing monitoring of probation requirements, which has become a bigger part of my job in recent years. Over half of each board meeting is dedicated to complaint review and executive session. We also do the application, examination, initial licensee, relicensure, and continuing education. We give three state written exams, in addition to five national board exams that are required. I'll talk a little bit more about that later. Chiropractors are required to provide 20 hours of continuing education proof with their relicensure application every year, and there's a very high turnover in chiropractic assistants receiving certification every year, so that's a big program. We provide information to the public and the profession concerning a multitude of policy and practice questions. We've codified those in a guide to policy and practice questions, which is always in need of updating because there's always a new wrinkle on a question that comes in. The board is a rulemaking body, and we have an administrative rules advisory committee with a number of lay and professional members. They're meeting again next week to review some rules, proposals, and issues. The board is supporting the profession's efforts to develop better, we used to call them practice guidelines, but we felt that term was so misinterpreted, we changed the name to the Educational Manual for Evidence-Based Chiropractic. the first chapter of that project, which has been under in development for a long time. It's a very slow process that involves layers of professional consensus, review of evidence. The patient-doctor relationship chapter I provided to you is an example of the product of that work. And the goal is to produce helpful recommendations for the practice of chiropractic to help doctors and patients with improved care through best information. Out of that process, at times, may come strong evidence for improved and clarified standards of practice. It's a primary responsibility of this board to determine what are minimal levels of safe, competent practice. And, of course, that appears to be a moving target sometimes, and so we need to keep working at those issues, and the evidence-based process, consensus process, also helps to identify minimum standards of practice which are supported by very high levels of evidence. And when those are identified, as a couple are in the chapter you have in front of you, then we ask the Administrative Rules Advisory Committee to take a look at those with the idea of, do they need to be modified or adopted into administrative rule. Our organization is staffed by 4.5 full-time equivalents. We have one office specialist, one as three-quarter time, an office specialist, two at three-quarter time, one administrative specialist, two, one full-time investigator, and the executive director. And we're not requesting any new positions for this biennium. Mr. Olson mentioned the two budget notes, and those are also in front of you in attachment two. The first budget note asks the board to consider switching or studying a birth date or a birth month relicensing system, and I heard some discussion about this yesterday, and I don't plan to take up 40 minutes of your time talking about licensing issues this morning. But we have studied it, and it is feasible, and we do have a proposed administrative rule to move in that direction. The benefits, of course, are that it evens out cash flow, and I think that's what the subcommittee 2 years ago was considering as an important feature. It evens out workload as well. On the downside, birth month relicensing, instead of having one deadline for relicensure a year that we have to process, we would now have 12 deadlines, and we would have to send out 12 notices that your relicensure fees are due in 2 months. So there's some potential for, in my opinion, a small amount of increased workload associated with that, but our staff who is here, Kelly Bird, our administrative specialist who studied this quite a bit, says the other licensing boards that have moved to this like it. So there's some benefits, and spreading out the workload is a benefit as well. Small fiscal impact, negative in revenues, but so this issue will be in front of the board for consideration. We really haven't received any input from the profession. Maybe some of them will come to our Rules Committee meeting on the 13th and give us input on whether they like that idea or not. The biggest problem with moving, of course, is a transition. And some boards who've done this have raised the ire of their licensees when they haven't educated them enough, because you have to go through a period of staggered license renewals. We would have a six-month renewal for people who renew in who have a birth month in January, and then at the other end you would have a 17-month renewal, and the fees and the continuing education requirement would be adjusted accordingly. So there's some potential for confusion, and it's change. And we're in the process of a lot of change with this profession and this agency's programs, and so that's would be a concern for me, is, you know, overloading the profession's ability to process all these changes. For example, we're going through a major change in our continuing education rule. On the committee 2 years ago, addressed those issues with the board, and so that's a transition that we're going through as well. So this issue will be in front of the board for consideration, and if this committee has an opinion about birth date, birth month relicensing, you know, should or shouldn't, I'm sure the board members here today would be happy to hear and consider that. The second budget note requests a report on the complaint investigation backlog, practice of guidelines development, and our efforts to engage in dispute resolution with one part of our profession. Let me address the public protection and complaint resolution issues first. Responding to and investigating complaints is by definition a reactive approach, and proactive strategies which address prevention of problems will be addressed after I address this. Overall complaints, in this biennium, we have significantly reduced our overall complaint and investigation backlog. In placing the highest priority on complaints of alleged sexual misconduct and doctor-patient boundary violations, other complaints regarding unlicensed practice or excessive treatment have not been addressed as rapidly as we would like. To address this, we've utilized the services of an investigator in the Department of Justice who works alongside our Assistant Attorney General, and we refer cases to him and situations for his assistance. For example, he recently assisted us with some investigation into an applicant who has a previous criminal history and wants to apply, and we needed a lot more background and research into that situation for the board's consideration. And he's currently working on four of our excessive treatment cases, which have been in the pipeline way too long, in my opinion. We also have a contract investigator assisting the board with our unlicensed practice case backlog. And we will continue to do this, resources permitting. The way it goes with small licensing boards is every once in a while you get a contested case situation which kind of takes over in terms of the amount of investigation that's needed, attorney general resources, contested case hearings, costs. And we had one of those cases back in year 2000, 2001, and it was really a big case. At the same time, we had any number of new boundary complaints coming into the board. So when we came to the session in 2001, we were concerned about that situation and communicated that concerns. But we've had some success in addressing those issues. In year 2001, the board resolved 96 complaints with 13 disciplinary actions resulting. And in year 2002, the board resolved 90 complaints with 8 disciplinary actions resulting, and currently we have 47 open complaint files. And I've given you kind of a rundown of what that looks like in attachment 4. And this is similar to the report that's going to the board, but I've redacted the names to protect the innocent and the confidentiality. Cases where there have been notices of proposed disciplinary action, those are public documents, so you will see the names listed on the list in that, and that also shows you kind of the spread of the cases that come before the board. And we feel that we're in relatively good shape compared to where we were 2 years ago with all this. At that time, we had 21 boundary sexual misconduct open complaints involving 16 doctors, and we've resolved almost all of those complaints that were before the board in 2001. In 2002, we closed 14 complaints concerning 13 chiropractors, resulting in one disciplinary action, and presently we have 8 open cases either proposed for disciplinary action or under active investigation. So I went down to about 4 cases, and then it bumped back up to about 8. So someday we'd like to see that 0. If you see one of the board's primary goals is, you know, sexual misconduct and boundary violations by chiropractic physicians will be eliminated. And I can tell you that It's been a persistent issue for this board the entire time I've been here, and they've taken many, many actions to address this issue, proactive and reactive, and we believe that it's had a significant effect, just anecdotally talking to doctors in the field. And someday we want to see that reflected in our complaint numbers, where these kind of complaints just don't happen anymore.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't see any designation of alcohol and drugs. Where do you...
Well, I'll tell you, I think those would come under unprofessional conduct, and perhaps we could add a category for that. Those cases have been very rare before this board, but in the public protection reports you have here, and I apologize, I think they're slightly out of order in the attachments, but there are two drug and alcohol cases in there, and one of them I put an extensive report in the public protection update that went out to the profession so they could see how we handled this case, because it was quite a bit of a learning experience. And we've had two cases within the last, I'd say, a year and a half. And we hadn't had one of these cases for about 4 or 5 years. And then, boom, we had two of them, and both of them involved doctors getting addicted to painkiller medications, usually as a result of some personal medical problem they had. And then once we had a chiropractic assistant who had the same issue. So you've read about this in the newspapers, and it does occur. This one doctor from the Gresham area, the board ordered him to get in a competency evaluation, and we consulted extensively with the Board of Medical Examiners Diversion Program, Dr. Susan McCall. It's an outstanding program, and they were very helpful in sharing their knowledge with us. And we ended up ordering this doctor to go to Hazelden Springbrook, a treatment facility, for evaluation. And when he got there, you know, he did the week-long evaluation, and they recommended that he go through a residential course of treatment for, I believe it was 2.5-3 months. And he voluntarily stayed in that program and came out the other end. And then he signed an agreement with the board when he came out to stay on the very strict program of rehabilitation, which the Springbrook facility prescribed. And he's been compliant with that so far. And I believe we have him. The board did a 6-month suspension, but stayed the suspension. So if he violates it, then he's got some more problems. But the board viewed that as a successful rehabilitation approach to this situation. And we have another doctor in a similar type situation who's a little more problematic in this to deal with. But we hope that we have that doctor on a treatment and rehabilitation program. We have signed agreements with both these doctors to engage in treatment as recommended by the professionals in this area.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brings another question to mind. I'm sure that there's overlap in some of the complaints that might be a drug related.
Yes, there is. Yes,
an example could be sexual misconduct or boundaries at the same time.
Right.
How do you chart that, or do you count that twice?
No, I don't. I count it as the primary area. Like there was another sexual misconduct boundary case that we had. There may have been some drug issues involved, but that was primarily a boundaries violation case. But as part of that final order with the doctor, he's supposed to be in counseling or in treatment for the drug issues as well.
Thank you.
Further questions? Please proceed.
One of the board's other strategies is to provide mentoring plans, and like all things, batch of these will come through, and then we won't see them for a while, and then another batch will come through, and I think we're about due for that second batch. It's a strategy that emphasizes rehabilitation and quality improvement as part of or in lieu of disciplinary action, and we've had 7 doctors go through this program since 1999, and it involves pairing the respondent doctor with a well-respected chiropractic physician generally in his community to do monthly meetings, to go over treatments, to look at chart notes. Oftentimes record keeping is a major issue. And that's proven to be a successful program for the board as part of our emphasis on rehabilitation. We're trying to get away from the strict, you know, hard disciplinary approach on every issue. Policy package number 102 addresses this and provides the budgetary basis for continuing this program because we've been advised that we need to have a signed personal services contract with the mentoring doctors. And so what we need to do is be the person, the entity that charges the respondent doctor for their hourly fee, whatever that is, $125 or something like that, and then turn around and collect the money and then pay out the money so that the mentoring doctor isn't in the position of also having to collect bills for his service from the person he's mentoring. So approval of that program would help us with that bill collection and management issue, and that's something that was requested by several of the doctors who provided the mentoring services for the board. They're probably, you know, never going to be adequately compensated for the value of their time, but we shouldn't have to burden them with bill collection as well. We have a couple of benchmarks which address the average time it takes us to resolve complaints. Of course, there's many factors affecting how long it takes it to resolve a complaint from the initial time we receive the complaint, which is often by telephone, to the final closure. But an overall average gives us some indication of our progress. So that was number one, overall average of time to open, time to close, and our goal is to get that down to at least 180 days and maybe less on average. And benchmark number two sets a goal of resolving 50% of sexual misconduct boundary complaints cases within 180 days, and that's a very ambitious goal too, but I think that's where we need to go as an agency, is to try and speed up processing, particularly of high priority complaints. Very challenging because you're dealing with sometimes issues where you get a telephone complaint and it may take months before the written complaint comes in. According to the Attorney General's office, if we get a telephone complaint, that's a complaint. You know, if a person calls in and says, I want to file a complaint against Dr. X because of billing and conduct issues, then we log that in as a complaint and we write down as much information as we can, and then we try and get a signed written complaint with a patient release of records form and all of that, and sometimes that part of the process takes a while too. And of course, if we don't get enough information or any information, then the board can close it out as insufficient evidence to do anything with that.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley.
If I may address just that point, Mr. McTeague, and by the way, it's great to see you.
Nice to see you.
It seems that there's a high number of dismissed complaints. Looking at the public protection update, your initial five, in one period of time there was 32 cases.
Well,
another period of time, 48. And then 28 cases. All of these are
sure.
In a year and a half.
I would say a couple things to that. I would say that we get a number of telephone complaints in which there really isn't enough information to do much with those complaints. So those, you know, we can write again to the complainant or try calling them and say, if you want this complaint to go forward, we need some additional information. So that accounts for some of it. And a lot of it is that complaints may come in, the board sees the issues, eyebrows get raised, there's real concerns, but then you have to ask the question, can we demonstrate to a lay hearings officer who's not a chiropractor, you know, that this is a violation of the minimum standards of the profession? And lots of times these issues go into this gray area. And what the board does in those cases is they oftentimes write a letter of concern, or they try and have a little dialogue with the doctor and say, you need to have improve in this area, and if you'll improve, then we can insufficient evidence and close this case. So it's a very tough hurdle for the board to go in front of a lay hearings officer and prove that something is a minimum violation of the standards of the profession. And so the board, you know, there's some cases the board would like to go forward on, but they just don't think they can get over that hurdle, and they try and resolve issues with the doctor through communication or an understanding, or would the doctor get some extra education in this area. So sometimes those cases that are closed, insufficient evidence, there has been a letter of concern communicated to the doctor. So if a second complaint comes in the same area, then I think the board's level of concern goes up and they're willing to take some action. So there's a lot going on in these complaints that may not produce an actual disciplinary action. And it's a serious thing to put a disciplinary action on a doctor's record, even if it's a letter of reprimand or a letter of concern or however low the sanction is, because once it's there, when we get a phone call from a provider organization, they're asking, what's the status of this doctor's license? And the staff will say, the database shows the doctor has a disciplinary action. Well, we'd like to see a copy of the disciplinary action. And in some cases, it affects the doctor's ability to be credentialed or placed on a panel of provider organization, and it has some economic effects. So, you know, the board's not anxious to discipline people, but they need to have a real crystal clear case to move forward on a disciplinary action. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that, Dr. McCarthy?
Well, Madam Chairperson Morgan and committee members, thank you for allowing me to come here today and converse with you on the budget issues. With respect to Mr. McTeague's...
excuse me, for the record,
yes.
Could you state your name?
My name is Richard McCarthy. I'm a chiropractor in Cottage Grove, Oregon. I am currently the president of the Board of Oregon Chiropractic Examiners.
Thank you.
With respect to the question that was asked and comments, is a lot of these complaints that come before the board are made by patients and other consumers are complaints regarding somebody who didn't like what took place during the time they were under the services of the chiropractor. And that may be a personality difference, didn't like the way something was done, or didn't like the remainder of their bill. These are some of the things that Mr. McTeague is talking about. And other complaints also do involve minimum standards, but as he says, it's an extremely difficult hurdle to prove that in a legal process going through a lay hearings officer. But a majority of these IEs or insufficient evidence or no statutory violations do generate around a difference of an opinion of how somebody was treated in an office that doesn't necessarily involve a violation of a minimum standard. So it's just kind of like my insurance company paid X amount. It's left with this amount on my bill. I don't want to pay that. So then I launch a complaint against the performance of the doctor. And so that's what happens to a lot of these, and that's where you see that figure.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up, Senator?
Yeah, again, Madam Chair, I would just note that in a 15-month period of time, it appears there were 108 dismissed complaints, but it's difficult to find that information in attachment 3, which is your detail on resolutions to complaints.
That's why I provided the other information.
Thank you.
Could you talk to the committee about how you communicate to the members of the public what the performance record of various members that your license is? If people call up and want to know if a certain chiropractor has any disciplinary issues or complaints against them, how do you communicate that information?
If there is a disciplinary action, we simply tell them what it is, and if they would like to receive the actual copy of the public document, we can provide that public document to them.
And that information is only available by them actually calling you? It's not available on your website or anything like
that? It's not yet.
Do you have plans to put it on your website?
It's been discussed at times. I guess I would ask the committee, is that something you think is a desirable thing?
I think I would be more interested in knowing what you are interested in doing with it. You know, we don't want to micromanage the functioning of the agency, but one of the things that we are really interested in is that members of the public can find that information in an easily accessible way.
Personally, I think it would be a good idea, but it's my board. I think I would defer that issue to the board and let them debate and resolve that, and maybe they'd have some comments on that there today.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mesri.
As we look at these complaints, do you break them out between the assistants and the physicians?
Frankly, we receive only a small number of complaints concerning chiropractic assistants in our database that goes into what's called the non-chiropractor category. So I don't break them out specifically because the numbers are very small. They do occur every once in a while. We get a complaint concerning a chiropractic assistant.
I'm sure follow-up.
Yes.
What kind of complaints do you get in that category?
We had one, a couple of years ago, we did have a boundaries complaint concerning a chiropractic assistant. More recently, we've had complaints that some chiropractic assistants are performing full body massage on their patients, and there's a question as to whether massage is a physiotherapy, and as long that certainly is an acceptable chiropractic treatment by a certified chiropractic assistant. However, the doctor needs to have done a workup on the patient and put that in his charts that there's a referral for this therapy. In a couple of cases, that link has been a little soft. There's a lot of LM licensed massage therapist students who are also getting certification as a chiropractic assistant, and some of them may be pushing the envelope a little bit on doing the full body massage work under the CA chiropractic assistant license, and so we've had a couple complaints along those lines, and we've sent some letters to doctors, and I know we have a current complaint along those lines that we're processing. So that's one area.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to address a couple of our proactive strategies. The board has supported a professions project to address practice issues through the what we used to call a practice guidelines process, but now it's called the Educational Manual for Evidence-Based Chiropractic. It's a three-tiered consensus process to review professional literature, reach consensus. It involves seed panels reviewing evidence, a nominal panel that meets as a group of 13 or 14 face-to-face to go over the seed statements, reach consensus, and then a Delphi panel, which is by mail. We send out copies of the draft proposals to 100-plus chiropractors and some external reviewers. And that's the process that the document in front of you in the blue has gone through, an extensive process, and we're assisted by a process expert who's donated a huge amount of her time. Her name is Marital Gatterman, chiropractor, former educator at Western States and the Canadian Chiropractic College, and she's now in Colorado, but she's still one of our licensees, and she's written textbooks that they use in colleges on the basics of chiropractic treatment, and she's an expert in consensus processes and has been assisting the board through this for the last 3 or 4 years, and it's a very slow process because it takes a long time to evaluate the evidence, come up with statements, and frankly, guidelines processes in the past have largely been dominated by academics, and so we have field doctors helping with this process. It's been very, I think, a very positive thing just to get the doctors in a room and watch them discuss these issues in great detail. It does have some controversy, and I'm probably not going to go into all of that right now, but it's been said that there's some so-called national documents that we should adopt in lieu of doing a process at the state level, and the board's research disputes that these are nationally accepted guidelines. And Dr. Dobson, who is here and a member of our steering committee, can address that further. Under Dr. McCarthy's leadership as board president, we've instituted a new program of meetings with all newly licensed chiropractors in Oregon. And this has helped to create a more personal connection and dispel some misinformation and misconceptions, and an opportunity to share information, address issues like record keeping and boundary issues, share resources with the board. For example, in the back of the patient doctor chapter is two self-assessment instruments that are useful to doctors to assess their vulnerability in their relationships with their patients. That's been a very successful program. We've met with over 250 chiropractors so far, and the feedback has been very positive. We've had meetings in different parts of the state. On chiropractic professional issues, the budget note, there was so much disagreement over our budget and our fee increase 2 years ago that the budget committee suggested that we enter into dispute resolution, and we engaged in an extensively long process during this last interim to address those issues. You have the documentation of all of our efforts in front of you, and we may have made some progress, but I'm not so sure. You know, there's basically four principal organizations within the state, two state associations, the college and the board, and the smaller the other associations, the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic, have not agreed to participate in the mediation program as recommended by the neutral assessor that we obtained through the services of the Oregon Dispute Resolution Commission. So, you know, we can, as a board, we can lead the profession to water, but there's no guarantee we can make them drink. And so our efforts, the board is committed to continuing to improve communication with all parts of the profession, and as part of that effort has worked with the Oregon Chiropractic Forum, and I'll let Dr. McCarthy address that.
The Oregon Chiropractic Forum was developed mainly through the efforts of the Oregon Chiropractic Association, i.e. CAO, and was their interpretation of the budget note that came down from the last legislative session that they were excluded out of this process of mediation, and they felt that this budget note mandated that all chiropractic groups be engaged in dialogue. So the Oregon Chiropractic Forum was an open forum of all chiropractic associations, college, the college here in Portland, and the Oregon Board, and that we come together and we discuss openly to the profession and various areas around the state regarding the issues before us. As of now, this Oregon Chiropractic Forum has met since this last year. We've been in the Dalles, we've been in Hood River, Pendleton, Salem, and just as of last week, we were in Clackamas before that, and as last week, we were in Bend. And represented there is, it's been the board, CAO, the Chiropractic Association of Oregon, and Western States has been present at all, but I think one. It's been very successful. The Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic, to the best of our knowledge, has not had any official representation at any of these meetings. We've had really great interaction and exchange discussing the issues before our profession, and find a significant consensus in a direction to go forward and support by the associations, the college, and the board moving forward as being the mainstream approach in chiropractic to this challenge before us in our healthcare delivery system.
Lastly, we want to discuss Senate Bill 786 and our diversity efforts. We are, and that's an attachment six. I have a report which shows our diversity statistics, and I think it shows the chiropractic profession has some challenges in the diversity area. So we have this baseline information for the first time. We had a discussion of Senate Bill 786 issues at our November 2001 meeting, and we asked Vicki Nakashima, who's the head of the Office of Multicultural Health, to come in and address and advise the board, and Dr. Dallas, who's here today, president of Western States Chiropractic College, also addressed their efforts at the college level, and I know they were involved in the Health Career Day that Ms. Thompson mentioned yesterday. We requested input from the state associations. We helped to organize a meeting of health board agency directors discuss Senate Bill 786 last summer. We, with Ms. Nakashima's help, we distributed a public announcement to the minority email listservs. I know there's many hundreds of people on those. Regarding openings on the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. We had a couple of expressions of interest. We've spoken with both of those, and I know one of them has submitted an application, and another may. We've actively encouraged a Hispanic chiropractor who serves on our Rules Advisory Committee to submit her application for membership on the board, because I know that one of the problems the governor's office, we've encouraged the governor's office to consider diversity, but they need to receive some more applications from folks. So we're part of the process of trying to encourage folks to turn in their interest forms for service on the board. I would say that one thing for sure is that more needs to be done in this area, and I would personally hope that I could be free of all this dispute resolution challenge that we've spent so much time on this last biennium, to definitely spend more time on diversity issues in the next biennium. And also I would just say that you have the leadership of the entire chiropractic profession in this room today. So I think it's a good time for all of us to recognize the importance of addressing diversity. And, of course, there's the challenges associated with that in the chiropractic profession. Three more things, very briefly. We are presently engaged in a major project to update our three-state written examinations. We've contracted with a psychometrician who worked with the board 8 years ago. We give a minor surgery proctology chiropractic exam, an OBGYN exam, and an ethics and jurisprudence exam, and all three need to be updated. And it's quite a process to do item writing and standard setting and all that goes involved with that. So we'll be recruiting about 50 chiropractors over the next 4 months to help us through that process, and expend upwards of $15,000 in that, which is in our present budget. Our board members are involved at the national level on the Federation of Chiropractic Licensing Boards. Dr. Galligan is our delegate, and Dr. McCarthy is our delegate to the National Board of Chiropractic Examiners. Several board members go to Greeley, Colorado once a year to assist in test development on the national examinations. Fortunately, that's at the national board's expense and not our expense, but that's an important level that this board participates at. Lastly, and I mean it this time, policy package 101 is a request to reclassify an office specialist 2 position to administrative specialist 2. This request has been evaluated by the Department of Administrative Services, and they approve of the request, and we hope you will too. That concludes my testimony. You happy to answer any other questions?
I'd like to go back and just talk a little bit about your performance measures.
Certainly.
You have they appear to be all very new, and you haven't had an opportunity to gather data on them yet. But I think that if you've been following the discussions that we've been having in the subcommittee and with LFO about the value and the weight that the Ways and Means process is going to put on the performance performance measures in the future. He probably gathered that we're going to start paying a lot of attention to this.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, when can we expect to see some actual values in your columns as, you know, compared to your targets? And I guess kind of preliminary to that is, you have the data sources listed that you're going to go to see where you are in terms of your target performance. When are we going to see some actual information here?
I was working on the performance measure data summary page just last week, and I need to do a little more work on it. I would be glad to share that with the committee. These performance measures were very challenging for us, the small boards, I think all of us, to come up with. They're very quantitative in their measurements, and kind of scratch your head and you wonder, well, are we really measuring the right things sometimes? I have some data as regarding average number of days to resolve a complaint, and frankly it kind of set me back a little bit, because when we resolved all those complaints in 2000 and 2001, the number of time it took to resolve those kind of kept going up, and I want the numbers to go down. So, for example, our 2002, the average days from open to close was 359, and we'd certainly like to get that down to about 180 days on average, I mean, recognizing all the factors that are involved. So I'd be glad to, you know, share what data I have at the moment, but I would say it's still a work in progress and it needs some more review by us.
See, we would welcome receiving that mm-hmm. data, and also as you as we go through the public hearing process and then into the work session process on the budgets, if you have the opportunity to compile more data that we can put into
certainly.
The presentation, please continue to provide that. And I think that when we're sitting on this side of the table, because of the time that we have to deal and the number of budgets that we have to deal with, being able to look at it from the management perspective of the performance goals and then over time how you're dealing with the challenges that those goals right. are attempting to bring forward to us is very important. So. My advice to you would be bring the data forward and continue to work with us. We also recognize that we don't have a perfect set of performance goals or measures. This is a new program that we're undertaking here, and we also anticipate that this process will be pretty much continually revised as the missions of the agencies are refined and things just change around us in reality in the state. So please consider this to be a real interactive process.
Certainly.
And we're
yeah.
not going to use this information to beat you over the head. We're going to use it to try to gauge how your membership, what kind of service delivery they're getting for the money that they give you.
We will provide you with the information in its present state, you know, with the caveat that it's still a bit of a work in progress.
Thank you. Further comments? Senator Mazzarelli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I've been reading when I should have been listening, and hopefully you haven't covered this, but could you give us an update on the controversy with your board and ODOC? As I read down through, and we've got a lot of material here to read for just having received it this morning, but as I read down through the material of 2002, it appears to me that there's still dispute present. And could you give us a sense of the update from your position?
Senator, Madam Chairperson, Senator, I can respond to that. As you saw in the information you have before you there, the last official contact was in a meeting in March 21, 2002. And that was a half-day meeting that was facilitated, as you can see, by a neutral assessor, William Schultz. And after that assessment report, there hasn't been any formal mediation contact. We agreed with the neutral assessor's report that we should go forward. We adopted that. And at subsequent to that, the response from ODOC was that their plans were to resolve this through a political settlement, political solution. And that's where it stands at this point. We haven't had any other formal contact at this point in time.
Madam Chair, could I
follow up?
Let me give you a little background. I served on the Health and Human Services Senate Committee last year and was very frustrated by these kind of disputes. And yours isn't the only area that is doing it. And I'm just having trouble understanding what the issues are. Are the mandates, are the authorities that you have in conflict with what the association membership feels is appropriate? So is there a need for legislative fix on that area? Is there a difference in vision on what your board should be doing? What is the baseline of what's going on here?
Well, Senator, I think every one of the issues that have been presented to us in our brief discussion with ODOC and subsequent and previous communications are all things that sitting down over a table in a profession and discussing your differences could resolve. It's nothing that you or anybody else in the state capitol needs to be a part of. There are differences of opinion on how to proceed with certain goals and objectives. There are personality complaint issues. There's complaints on how we proceeded with certain things, how it's perceived we proceeded with things. What we did find is there's a tremendous amount of misinformation that has happened that has generated some of the concerns. And again, that can all be taking place by sitting down and diligently working through those things. And we offer that opportunity. And there's another opportunity coming this next Wednesday in Albany. There's going to be another Oregon Chiropractic Forum meeting in which everybody's invited, and representatives from ODOCs are also, they always get notices on these things that come out from all types of discussions. The simple task of being involved in board functions, the rules committee, being involved in peer review process that we've encouraged ODOC to be involved in, but that hasn't happened. And I can't answer to why that hasn't happened other than what we're presented with in the resistance and not willingness to go forward with that and wanting a political solution for it.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. Do you have any ODOC members on your board? Or are any of your board members of ODOC?
The past governor has not appointed any ODOC members, and at this current time, no, there isn't.
And it's probably in our document something. How large is your board?
Our board consists of five chiropractors, professional, and two public members.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
As a follow-up to the issue that Senator Mesley raised, where is your board in terms of appointments running out?
That's a very good question. There was three chiropractors. Dr. Caldwell is, I think, from your district, Representative Bates. Dr. Jim Wilkins from the Ben Redmond area, and myself were up for reappointment last year. Dr. Chuck Simpson is going off the board, and his position came open, and we have a layperson, Jim Hendry, who's going off the board, and his position is open.
So all the positions are open?
No, there's two. There's seven members on the board.
Oh, okay.
There was actually five openings that are open right now, that are open for reappointment. And the three reappointees, myself, Dr. Wilkins, and Dr. Caldwell, they were not moved forward in the last legislative session.
And you have a situation where the members of your board can be appointed one more time? They can serve two terms?
Customarily, there is a two-term A term is 3 years, and customarily a professional and or a public member serves 2 3-year terms. It's just been, I don't know if there's anything written in stone that says they can't go more, they could serve more, but customarily it's been by tradition they serve 2 terms, and probably most board members would say that's enough anyway.
So I would assume that our colleagues on the Senate side will be seeing a few of these through the appointment process.
Sounds like
Madam Chair.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm ask a couple of questions about what, has an ODOC representative ever been on the board, and if so, when did they leave? And has an ODOC representative been nominated for a board position? What normally happens in these situations, either your professional organization or your board makes recommendations to the governor, and then he looks at that and makes a decision and passed to the Senate for confirmation. So the process is not one in which the governor makes the decision in the vacuum. That decision is made for most boards from the professional organization or from the board itself. So I'm going to go back to what Senator Mesley has said, and I want a little more background behind this. Have you actually tried to get an ODOC member on the board, or have you actually tried to get ODOC members off the board?
Representative Bates, a couple questions there. Currently, there is no ODOC member on the board. To the best of my knowledge, the organization, Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic, it came into existence back in the early 1990s. It was a response group, a development that came out of the work comp issues that happened in the early 90s with regards to this profession. That organization, I can't speak for how it's evolved, but I know it has evolved somewhat from those issues. There never has been, to the best of my knowledge, an ODOC member that has been appointed by a governor to the board. I can't speak for what recommendations have been in the governor's office. I don't know. This board doesn't actively put appointments in. They may talk to people who ask questions about being appointed. Association can, or individuals on their own, put their names into the governor's office for consideration. There's a couple other questions you had there.
Well, Madam Chair.
I do have one other comment. There was an ODOC member who was a member of the peer review committee for some time back in the mid-90s. The board has been willing to appoint to the peer review committee, which is an extension of the board for investigative processes. 7 members have actively tried to recruit ODOC members for those positions, but they have not responded with any names.
Madam Chair. Does the Chiropractic Association nominate people to the governor's office, or do they not nominate people to the governor's office? That's a yes or no answer. Does the Chiropractic Association nominate chiropractors for board positions to the governor's office? Yes or no?
I think so, yes.
Thank you. Having agreed that they do that, has that Chiropractic Association ever nominated a member of ODOT?
Yes.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative March.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a couple a little off the track back to licensing and workflow and that. One is you have an annual license. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Have you ever considered requiring or making optional a 2-year license, as a lot of folks have, a biennial license?
No, we haven't.
I certainly understand that the fee dispute sometimes might be related in that it would jump the fee, but you might consider offering it as you go to a 2-year license. You cut your workload in half for those licensees.
We'll take it under consideration. My licensing expert is right behind me.
Okay. And then secondly, you mentioned a high turnover in chiropractic assistants.
Yes.
Is that a field where I mean, it's certainly another healthcare allied field, and is it a field that's relatively easy to get into? And,
yes.
And can we, what can we do to help fulfill the need?
Ask the doctors to pay their chiropractic assistants more. That'd be the number one thing I could think of.
Okay.
I don't know what they'll say to that.
Pay problem. Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. McTeague and Mr. McCarthy before we go to the BAM budget analysis? Mr. Patton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jeremy Patton with the Department of Administrative Services. My little handout should be on your desk in front of you. If you go ahead and turn to page 2, this is a historical overview of the board's budget. As you can see, the governor's balanced budget is 967,493 other funds, which is an 8.4% increase over the 2001-03 legislatively approved budget. The board consists of 5 positions, 4.5 full-time equivalency. Page 3 is a brief overview of the governor's budget. The budget would continue the current level of service to licensees and citizens. It would reclass one administrative support position, add some enhancements to the mentoring program for licensees involved in disciplinary actions, and includes fee increases subject to ratification by the legislature. Page 4 is the overview of the budget categories. Personal services is about 57% of the board's budget. Services and supplies is about 42%. The special payments of 1% is new this year, and that's for the mentoring program. Page 5, as you can see, there was no emergency boards with any fiscal adjustments during the interim. There was a special session action from special session 3 for compensation adjustment. In the essential packages, package 010 includes an increase in mass transit tax. And the board used standard inflation in their inflation package, 3.5% for rent, 12.4% for attorney general. As far as policy packages, the board did need to implement a package 070 for revenue shortfall. This would eliminate one office specialist, one position, and reduce services and supplies. The board also received a program reduction. We reduced their funding and facilities rent account that was being used to fund board meetings and meetings for new licensees. Package 100 would restore the current program level, restore reductions in package 070 above, and would increase other funds revenues by $122,143. Package 101 is the position reclassification that was mentioned by the board in their presentation. Package 102 is the mentoring and plans and supervision package. The board created a mentoring program in the fall of 1999 to address complaints and cases involving inadequate clinical decision-making and record-keeping of its licensees. The Assistant Attorney General advised the board to implement a formal arrangement whereby the board assigned a personal services contract with the mentoring doctor. As a part of this disciplinary order, the doctor receiving the treatment would agree to reimburse the board for the cost of the mentoring program, so this package is self-funded within the licensees who participate. As far as fees and revenue changes, you can see the listed fees that will be increased upon ratification of House Bill 5006. There does need to be an amendment to the bill to include the limited active license fee, which was absent in the bill this time, so there will need to be an amendment to that bill to include that fee. The only technical adjustment is to eliminate the impact of the merit increases. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Questions or comments for Mr. Patton? Got off the hook. We have a sign-up sheet with people wishing to testify on these issues, and the chair gives preference to people that come from more than 100 miles away. So I will call at this point Don and Jan, and I believe it's Ferrante.
Well, I guess there's one advantage of living 100 miles away from the Capitol. My name is Dr. Donald M. Ferrante, and I'm a chiropractic physician, and I've been in private practice for 30 years. I'm also one of the directors of the Chiropractic Association of Oregon, which is the largest organization for chiropractors in the state. primarily what I want to speak to is the issue of what we consider professional doctors in this state. The CAO, the Chiropractic Association of Oregon, is really concerned that the patients who seek care from chiropractors are allowed to have the best doctors that they can possibly have, most ethical, etc. And we are doing a real effort and push to ensure that. Over the last year and a half, I've participated with a law firm that has gone out throughout the state to address one of the issues that concerns us most, and that's the sexual harassment and boundary issues. And what we have been able to do is to put on educational seminars that we hope will be a program to eliminate that, because many times the doctors themselves don't realize the situations that they put themselves into, and as a result of that, the complaints are filed, and then it becomes a real issue for everyone. And what we have done is we have started to compile guidelines to help them. Some of the issues we are addressing is to have a female in the room when and if possible at all times with examinations. And we are addressing the issues of keeping the doors open and not gowning the patients, because those three situations we find lead to complaints. So we are dealing with that. Also, with the budget issue and how the board is concerned to this, I look at it from being in practice 30 years as basically we pay our fees every year, and I look at it as basically a tax. We have the right to participate and say what we want as citizens of this country, but at the end, we definitely contribute to what we use and happens in the state. And in our profession, we need the board's strength to be able to look into the issues of complaints, try to help rectify that, and the only way they can do that is for the budgets to reflect the increase in the amount of problems that we may or may not have, with the insight into eliminating the problems, not getting into issues of how long it takes to indemnify those. So I'm here basically today as part of the Chiropractic Association to support that. Also, as Doc has mentioned, I participated in all four of the five forums that we've had as a representative for the Chiropractic Association throughout the state, and we've had doctors come to the forum to issue their concerns, complaints, recommendations, etc. And I'm here to tell you that it was very positive, and for the most part, everybody shares the same general direction as we do to try to keep our values as high as we can as a profession. Thank you.
This is a whole new forum for us. But
please, we recognize how intimidating it is to be in this process. And please just speak and don't try to not be nervous. We've all been there.
Okay. I am currently the managing director of the CAO. I was appointed in November.
For the record, could you state your name, please?
Sure. Jan Ferrante.
Thank you.
I would only like to just state that my husband, with regards to Representative Bates that was speaking about the ODOC concerns, my husband was a past ODOC member, and we also on our CAO board now have Dr. Steve DeShaw, who is a former ODOC member. We are all back to the Chiropractic Association of Oregon to try to unify our state organization. And so I would just like to bring that to your attention, that we are trying to, in a different approach, maybe bring everyone back together onto the same page as maybe liaisons with the board or whatever it might take. But we go back a long way with the president of ODOC and with several of their other members. And we are hoping to open communication, and so that you don't have to be in the middle of many of these airings that have apparently been going on. So I am here just to support the board and to say that we are working to try to get things going in the right direction for our
profession. Thank you. Questions or comments from the committee members? Thank you very much for coming here today. Chair calls Vern, and I'm going to mangle everyone's name. I'll just apologize in advance for that. Vern Sabot and William Dallas. Welcome, gentlemen. Mr. Sabot.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dr. Vern Sabo. I am a chiropractic physician from Albany. I am the current president of the largest trade organization, the Chiropractic Association of Oregon. I've also served as the delegate to Oregon for the American Chiropractic Association and represent the profession on the federal level as well. I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 5005 and 5006. The Chiropractic Association of Oregon, the board and membership believe that the Board of Examiners is doing an excellent job. Patient-centered, evidence and consensus-based chiropractic practice is the future of the profession, both on the state and on the federal level. And that's where we're headed. The Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners' work on the guidelines development is exceptional. The leadership they've shown is lore back at the House of Delegates in Washington, D.C. when we meet. In fact, the last meeting we had, many of the delegates were discussing what Oregon was doing. University-based chiropractic schools are coming, very likely starting with Florida State University in the fall of 2004. Also, on the federal level, the profession has gained new levels of acceptability with the passage of the Department of Defense bill and the Veterans bill. The Department of Defense bill provides all active duty personnel full chiropractic benefits. The Veterans bill, which passed last congressional session, provides for chiropractic treatment to all veterans, and with the caveat that they can select a chiropractic physician as their primary care doctor. Increased level of acceptability comes the heightened level of accountability, and that speaks to patient-centered evidence and consensus-based guidelines or practice. I would like to make a comment to Senator Meserle, who is not here, but my contention would be that the Chiropractic Association of Oregon, the main trade organization, Western States Chiropractic College, the academic arm of the profession, and the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners, quality control agency of the profession, constitute mainstream and representative of the profession where it's headed. There are no other groups. There are us, and then there's ODOC. And I wanted to clarify that. That's all I have, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Dallas.
Right. My name is William Dallas, and I'm president of Western States Chiropractic College. And I think of interest, I'm also currently the president of the Association of Chiropractic Colleges, which is an international organization of all chiropractic colleges across the world. I think that pretty well demonstrates the enormous change that's taking place in the profession. It was mentioned earlier about the change and the pain that goes with it. We are in the process of bringing this profession together and beginning to define who we are and where we begin and where we end. You may not know it, but we have 50 state statutes in the United States that govern the practice of chiropractic, and they're all somewhat different. That creates an enormous difficulty in trying to standardize the approach. For instance, the program that Dr. Sabo mentioned, the Department of Defense, will very soon have 132 military sites that will have to be staffed with chiropractors, and we have to assume that there will be some process to standardize what it is they're going to offer the patients in those military sites. 150 VA hospitals are in exactly the same position, which will be staffed over the next 4 or 5 years. We go from there to the National Health Service Corps, which was a bill that just passed the Congress this last year that will take chiropractic graduates, and they'll be in the same position as medical graduates who go out and they serve in medically underserved areas in order to provide medical service or health care to those who are underprivileged. So all of those require this enormous surge in the profession to identify who are we and where are we going to serve best. And so that's what a lot of this is about. The term was used earlier, a gray area. When you are working on a kind of a grandiose political scale and you're not concerned with the kind of details that we have in the past, all of a sudden you begin to realize that there has to be some definition as to what it is you do and why you do it. And so standards of practice have been the cry across the profession, not just across the profession, now across the world. There are 35 chiropractic colleges across the world today that are in a state of formation, almost all with universities. South Africa, across Europe, across South America. There are two in Brazil, one just opening in Mexico, one in Chile. At the same time, we're across the Far East. So as a consequence, the entire profession is faced with the issues that you hear reflected in the state of Oregon. And the human reaction to the change that is required and the kind of conformity that some think it is almost predictable in that reaction. So I'm here to say that the State of Oregon Board, and I have a pretty good overview as to what's happening across the U.S., is as responsible and as aggressive in addressing those challenges as any board in the United States, and may well be the best. They've made some really impressive presentations at the Federation of Licensing Boards and have addressed those issues in a very functional and meaningful way. I expect that there's going to be resistance to it because anytime you make this kind of a change, that's very standard. But we're here to support the Western States Chiropractic College are here to support the requests of the examining board to not only continue what they're doing, but to certainly improve the practice and standardize it to the best that they possibly can, certainly for the protection of the patient. I think that concludes the remarks I have, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the panel for Dr. Szabo or Dr. Dallas? Thank you very much, gentlemen. We appreciate you taking your time to come here today. Chair calls Aaron Haley and Joanne Eggeman.
Madam Chairperson, and dear members of the Budget Committee, I'm going to read my statement. I am a constituent of Representative Smith. My name is Erin Haley. Excuse me, I'm just getting over the flu. I'm an Oregon State licensed massage therapist practicing in Canby, Oregon. I have come here today to testify to you about what the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners has meant to me these past 3 years and why it is so important that this board be properly funded in order to carry out, excuse me, its intended purpose. After learning that other complaints had been made, I became involved in hearings proceedings involving the sexual misconduct of a male chiropractor in Canby, Oregon. His behavior was loathsome, despicable, unethical, and against the law. After numerous complaints were filed against him, the Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners and the Chiropractic Association of Oregon were summoned into action. For 2 years, I worked very closely with the OBCE. I felt it was my duty as a citizen and as a responsible massage therapist and as a woman to come forth and assist the board and to give testimony. At all times, the OBCE was thorough, fair, and ethical in its investigation. In particular, I want to praise Michael Summers and our attorney for their tireless and heroic efforts. These complaints were not in any way frivolous, a waste of time, or a misinterpretation of the chiropractor's intentions. The incident that happened to me would be completely repugnant to any of us. But to have this happen in a medical office is especially galling. It is a reflection on the whole chiropractic profession and the massage therapy profession as well, since that is where I had my office at the time. That is why we need so desperately to adequately fund the OBCE. The board gives voice to ordinary citizens as well as to other medical professionals who work with chiropractors. This board provides the means by which citizens can air their grievances and receive assurances that this branch of medicine remain responsible to the community. If adequate funding is not provided, the legislature will be sending a message that the welfare of citizens does not matter. Because this is an area where women are more often the victims, in my case, in which I was involved, there were at least 6 women complainants. Women's welfare will be sent back to an era when sexual violations and sexual harassment were common practice and nothing could be done about it. The Oregon Board of Chiropractic Examiners needs the means to be able to investigate thoroughly alleged offenses so it can either clear and exonerate or substantiate allegations against a chiropractor. Failure to provide adequate funding would not serve justice. Lastly, the board is well-meaning. While the board is well-meaning, it is simply not strict enough in dealing with offending chiropractors. Whether lacking the will or lacking the funding necessary for the most thorough prosecution and follow-up to these cases, the board and the state should not send a message to physicians that they can be doctors and sex offenders and nobody will do anything about it. I thank this committee for listening to my testimony. When you consider everything, I hope that you will put aside any political agendas and prejudices and remember the most important component involved, that being the welfare of the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Segman.
Hi. I am in Representative Smith's district.
Welcome both.
And I just want to thank you for letting me come and voice my opinion on funding for the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. I want to tell you a little bit about myself. My husband and I own our own nursery business. We have been doing it for 28 years. Our whole family has gone to chiropractors for 20 years or more. So I am well acquainted with their office procedures. I strongly support the funding of the Chiropractic Association of Oregon, a group that is viewed as largely supporting science-based practices and cooperative with the licensing board. I would like to share with you how the Board of the Chiropractic Examiners handled my case. In December 1998, I went to Dr. Shivika because my regular chiropractor doctor was going on a vacation and I needed to be taken care of while he was gone. I was in a car accident and in late April, I had back surgery and I needed more care. On my third or fourth visit to Shivika, he had me lay on the adjustment table on my back. He undid my belt, reached in under my pants, and began pushing extremely hard on my inner hip bone. He had me move my leg out and in while he pushed, and I breathed out. When it was done, I could talk. I asked him why he had done that to me. He never answered my questions, and I left my office. His office. When my chiropractor came back from his vacation, I told him what Shivika had done to me. My doctor encouraged me to file a complaint. I told him I would take the form and think about it. I took it very seriously, filing a complaint against someone. I realized that evil prevails when people stay silent. I did not want something more serious to happen to someone else. I filed a complaint to the Board of Chiropractic Examiners on Shivika. I don't know if you realize how many things happen in the process of investigating someone, so I will summarize the process. A few weeks later, I was contacted by Michael Sommer, an investigator for the board. He came by a few times to talk with me. He checked me out to see if I was credible. Michael Sommer is an outstanding person. He was very businesslike, yet sensitive to my feelings. Next, I filed and notarized an affidavit. The board interviewed me and I talked to the attorney defending us. Then we testified at the hearing. The entire process took about 2 years. Then the ruling came out. I was upset when I heard that the Board of Chiropractic Examiners did not take away the license of Shivika. Then I found out why they had been so reluctant to do so. The hearings officer, Stephen Tigger, had basically disregarded the complaints of 6 people, and I heard it was up to 12, but I didn't know any of the people that had complaints against Shivika, and exonerated him. That's just unbelievable. I have nothing good to say about Stephen Tigger. the Board of Chiropractic Examiners made a thorough, meticulous investigation of all the allegations. The board should be commended on their job, not criticized for what they did. They handled themselves in a professional manner while dealing with sensitive issues. When the Board of Chiropractic Examiners police themselves, it gives credibility to their profession. They should keep their standards high. Richard McCarthy is a decent, honorable man who should be thanked for maintaining the integrity of the chiropractic profession. Did not Shivika take the state board exams in order to get his license? Then he should be aware of all the rules and regulations set by the board that he had to follow in order to get his license. Shivika ignored them and blatantly chose to do his own thing. What he did to some of his other patients is despicable and demeaning to women. He did far worse things to them than he did to me. He acted recklessly, and now he is blaming the board for the choices he has made. Shivika was only in practice for 2 years when these 6 complaints were filed against him. I would encourage the board to re-examine their ruling to see if he has been compliant in all the things that they had set up for him. Shivika has not been remorseful for what he has done. Instead, he has blamed the board for doing their job. We need funding so that we can protect the public from such doctors. I thank this committee for giving me the voice to voice my frustrations and my concerns.
Thank you. Questions or comments from the board members for Ms. Haley or Ms. Hageman?
I'll just thank you for coming forward and expressing your concerns. We appreciate it very much. I know it was a very personal matter that you brought forward, and we appreciate it.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I'd echo that, and thank you for your courage stepping up in a public way and speaking this issue. Thank you.
Thank you, ladies. Chair calls Lawrence Castle and Kathleen Galligan.
Madam Chair, if I may, could I ask the question again? As a board representative, I can answer any questions.
Thank you. Castle. I'm really part of the last group. My name is Larry Castle. I'm an attorney in Canby, and I live in rural Canby in Representative Smith's district.
Yay! I'm well represented today, aren't I?
Let's hope they are.
Just so you know, Erin Haley, who just spoke to you, is my wife.
Donut Sunday for you.
Yeah.
I'm speaking really as a citizen who has had an opportunity to see the workings of the board. As my wife explained, she was involved as a complainant and a witness in a board matter. And I learned something about how the board, and it's about the board and its operations. Actually, a number of years ago, too many to recall, I worked in the Legislative Council office for a few sessions, so I learned a little bit about how boards are set up and how they work at that time. I also learned how hard you members have to work during the session, so I appreciate the chance to be here. I want to speak just briefly about a concept, and that is that the licensing boards of Oregon carry an important responsibility to ensure that Oregonians can have confidence in their licensees and confidence that the state is protecting them from, at the very least, the grossest of malfeasance perpetrated by those licensees. The chiropractic board has to have an adequate budget so that they can do that job. Because of the case that my wife was involved in, I had a chance to meet and talk with a couple of the complainants in that case and to read the orders that were issued in the case and which described all of the complaints. This was a very serious matter that needed to be investigated. If the board had not done so, or lacked the funds for a serious investigation, what would have happened to the confidence that Oregonians need to have in our healthcare professionals and in our state protections. One of the complainants said that she would just not want to see chiropractic care if she thought that such complaints would just be pushed aside. And she certainly wouldn't want to file a complaint if nothing were to happen with it. Who would want to file a complaint if they thought that it wouldn't be treated seriously? It's difficult enough for the complainants to have to sit by and see the perpetrators out in their community still telling false stories about what really happened and giving interviews to newspapers to try to give their side and to minimize what they've done. Why would anyone want to have a board that simply licensed individuals to handle our health issues and then ignored how that responsibility was carried out? The only real meaning that a state board can have is to be a watchdog for the public good. They're there on behalf of we the citizens to be sure that we can rely on the people that are providing our care. Unfortunately, there are healthcare professionals who abuse their positions and cause undue pain to their clients and to others and to the community. The board must have the ability to confront those abuses and protect the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions of the committee?
Thank you
very much for coming and talking to us today. Chair calls George Siegfried and Thomas, I believe it's Pike.
Excuse me.
Come forward.
Excuse me, but we're not work together. I don't know if it's necessary for us to sit here and testify or not. It's okay, I'd like to give you a copy of the
Good morning.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. My name is George Siegfried. I'm a chiropractor in McMinnville, Oregon. I'm here representing the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic Leadership Committee. I'm the current legislative co-chair, past president, and one of the founders of the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic. I've been practicing in McMinnville for over 17 years. I'd like to give you a brief summary of my involvement in this legislative process, which I'm still learning about. 2 years ago, the last legislative session, we were informed that we were going to have our licensing fees increased. And my desire to just find out what was going on at the local level, I went to some town hall meetings, and a couple of my representative and senator, after just sitting there basically for several meetings, asked me why I was there, and I told him that I was very concerned as the president of our organization that we were going to have our fees increased. And so Senator George and Representative Butler, Representative Nelson both said to me, well, you better come to Salem. And I said, well, we've been trying to deal with this board for a long time. We haven't gotten anywhere with some of our issues. And they said, well, then you need to have legislative relief. So that's how I got started with this process, and it's been a long one, and now we went through the last session, and we seemingly feel like we're starting over again. But I'd like you to know from the beginning that we support this board. We support this agency. We support the concept of having a chiropractic board of examiners as an agency and an institution. And we also have a profound respect for the legislative process. In fact, we've been seeking legislative relief now since the last session from the business practice procedures and policies of this agency. We feel that it could operate more efficiently and better according to the statutes and rules that have been given to them by you. Every agency that I found out recently that there's over 205 boards. Every one of them has a rule book that they're supposed to follow. And we just don't think that they've been following them the way they should be. And I have a few statements for you to consider while discussing and deciding on 5005 and 5006, which reflects a budget of over $900,000 with this board. But at the same time, I'd like to give you a brief history on this issue. Our organization has had many differences with this board for over 12 years. However, in 2001, they wanted to increase our fees 50%, and we decided to dispute that and seek legislative relief for that because we had been getting nowhere with this agency in our participation in various committee levels. We currently have no representation on the board, and we never have. And what we found in our investigation and presented to the legislature was, in fact, supported by the legislature. And these are some of the following things that the legislators supported us on. And that was that the board was being fiscally irresponsible. They were violating statutes and rules. There was conflict of interest on the board. There was inefficient handling of the sexual misconduct cases, which I might add we are severely opposed to any of this sexual misconduct activity, but we felt that some of the cases were being inefficiently handled. And there were other cases. In addition to doing random audits of the patient files without a specific complaint, which led to a statutory change, which is also a violation of the doctor-patient relationship. And then they were pursuing argon-only guidelines of practice, which guidelines already exist nationally and internationally, have been adopted by various state organizations and international organizations. So finally, there was testimony presented at the legislature, and a very prominent citizen attorney said that he felt the board was out of control, pursuing witch hunts and operating above the law. And this was made to Representative Butler's Committee on Transportation and Economic Development, and in the process they were just creating a bigger bureaucracy. So what did the legislature decide? The legislature decided in the last issue that Representative Butler's committee voted unanimously to not give a 50% fee increase, but only a 20% fee increase to maintain a current service level and to stop pursuing the argon-only guidelines and to be more prudent financially. The Senate, at the same time, in the last legislature, refused to reappoint the current members of the board, which process ended after the last governor's tenure. And now we are starting over seeking representation, as well as seeking legislative relief relative to this board's practices and policies and procedures. Having said that, you have my recommendations here. And by the way, the only reason I'm here by myself is because we found out about this in a very untimely fashion, and so I just closed my practice this morning, came down here. We're not really lobbyists or anything, but that's why I'm the only one here. Ordinarily, we'd have more people here. But having said that, you have our leadership's recommendation in front of you for the next biennium at the bottom of this Board of Chiropractic Examiners agency totals. And I would like to be sure that they are entered into the record. And I would also like to say that we haven't had as much time to review this budget as we had for the last budget review, even though Mr. Olson was kind enough to fax this to me. We just weren't able to have the time to study it the way we did before with him. But nevertheless, this is all we have. So if I'm mistaken on any of these recommendations, I certainly stand corrected. But to begin with, it says here no fee increase. But like I said, we don't have any problems with fee increases if they're justified. But we also don't want any money for Oregon guidelines or educational manuals, which already exist. We don't want any money spent on out-of-state travel, no new personnel. I guess my understanding of the mentoring program might be a little bit off, so again, I stand corrected there if there's money going to that and doesn't need to be, or if there's money that's going there and needs to be going there. And we also don't want to have to pay for Mr. McTague's contempt of court costs. And until we see their checkbook, profit and loss, and daily logs, we have a real problem with this board and their budgetary activities. We also would like to see the board follow statutes and rules in a better fashion, sanction the board members who are in violation of the same, and most importantly, we've been accused of coming down here, airing this stuff to the legislature. Well, our position is that we want this board to be accountable to the legislature because this is where they get their power to. The people give this our board the opportunity to exist and be the watchdog. And we'd like them to follow the true legislative intent, which is outlined and which is defined in those statutes. And we also would ask that the current board members not be reappointed, which is what we asked for before, and the legislature agreed to. Now, in closing, we operate in an environment right now that there's severe financial problems and a severely reduced tax base in this state, and it's affecting everybody. All government agencies we feel should run on a restricted budget. The leadership of the Oregon Doctors of Chiropractic is not asking the impossible. We don't think we're asking the impossible. We are constantly looking for examples of success that we as a profession can follow. And with that in mind, you just have to look to the state of Washington, which has twice the number of chiropractors. They reduced their budget by 20%, and they have just as many complaints as we do down here. Yet they have taken the necessary steps to streamline their methods of operation and have responded fiscally in a responsible manner to their state's financial challenges. We would like our board to do the same. And I'd like to thank you for your time, and even though I'm the only leadership member here, and I'm certainly willing to try to answer any questions you may have or any comments.
Questions? Thank you. Where is your practice located?
McMinnville, Oregon.
Okay. Maybe I missed that. Beg your pardon. Why is there an issue with Oregon-only guidelines?
Well, because there's already national and international guidelines that exist for every phase of practice, and they talk about boundary issues. They're already in our rules. So it's not like we're opposed to these boundary issues, but they exist. The question is maybe how they've been handled.
So are you saying that that this board should adopt national rules as well as their Oregon rules? I'm trying to understand where you're going with this Oregon-only rule deal.
Well, simply that we have in Oregon a practice and utilization guidelines that have been existing since 1992, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the board started this Oregon-only practice and utilization guidelines process some time ago. We questioned that, and members of our group that were on these committees just were getting nowhere, so they ethically thought they, for many reasons, left some of these committees dealing with this stuff. And so the point is, we have guidelines now. We have things in the rules that talk about boundary issues, and we just think it's a waste of time and money. We're not opposed to progress, but they've spent several years on two chapters. Everything else relative to practice has been defined. They're guidelines. They're not cast in stone. It's not that there's ever reason to improve upon them, but these things already exist, and they've been spending a tremendous amount of time and money on this, even though there's volunteers. There's also phone calls, meetings, and things like this that go on relative to this stuff, to these issues. So we're not opposed to guidelines. It's just that they already exist, and they're used throughout the
profession. So are you saying that you would like this board to also adopt national guidelines as well as their own?
Yes, ma'am. They've been asked. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on what you were trying to get at.
I'm sorry if I wasn't.
That's okay. I understand it now. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Senator Mesley, I would ask everybody to be mindful of the fact that we need to be out of here by 10:30.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Very short question. How many members do you have in your organization?
We have over 100 members in our organization.
100 and... Okay. And that's of a total licensing of about 1,100, did I hear?
Yes, sir. Well, I mean, I'm not sure the exact numbers, but there are. Okay. Not sure.
Further questions? Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much.
Today. We have Ms. Galligan and Mr. Pike. Would you like to come forward? Ms. Galligan, please sign in and proceed.
Actually, I think he's going to, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, if he answers your questions about the guidelines first, is that...
Please be mindful of the fact that we now have...
I understand. Mostly, I'm just intend to answer questions that were raised in the testimony. That's my main purpose for being here.
Madam Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Thomas Dobson. I'm a chiropractor in Portland, and I'm in support of Budget Bill 5005 and Fee Bill 5006. My specific comments are related to, and I have material that I've passed out to you, related to the issue of guidelines, national guidelines. I'm not going to labor you with a full read of it. It's very detailed, and I apologize for that, but I think it's important that it need be. I was essentially the person who was in charge of getting us. I took us to the point of national of Oregon guidelines. I've been the longest standing person in this process, and during the course of this, and 2 years ago, we were asked to find and review these guidelines for adoption, and I took a very detailed and deliberate review of these and have found some serious flaws in terms of their guidelines, and they're listed there in the document I provided you. There's limited scope of practice. These guidelines, the national guidelines that are being suggested that we adopt, are focused on a limited scope of practice and would curtail the practice of chiropractic in the state of Oregon. I've listed some quotes in the guidelines that explain that. I found some serious methodological flaws in the guidelines, which refer to the process. A person who was suggested to have participated in it as a medical doctor had no participation in it and denied any participation in it, and it was listed as a contributing member to the guidelines process. The evidence is very dubious. The references are improperly cited. There's no footnotes in the text to find out where these references in the back refer to. There's no way to validate them, and there's fraudulent references in there. We, on a quick search of three of those, I found two that were that didn't look right, and I searched them out, and I found completely contrary opinions expressed. The quote was in there for reference for support of particular issues. When the research was looked into, I found that it is completely contrary to the intent of the guidelines. And that put
Ms.
serious...
Mr. Dobson, if I could interject, I appreciate the work that you've done and the detail of the analysis that you've done on the guidelines, but I really hesitate to open this committee up to a discussion of the internal workings of the board on that level.
Okay.
We are obviously not the people that are either prepared or equipped to deal with the internal workings of your group in that way.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to say then in summary that I believe it would be wholly wrong and inappropriate for the state of Oregon to adopt these national guidelines based upon the flaws that I found in my review.
Thank you. Do the members of the committee have any questions for Dr. Dobson? Do you have a statement or a question?
I'm Dr. Kathleen Galligan. I practice in Lake Oswego, Oregon. I'm the Vice President of the Board of Chiropractic Examiners. And basically, I would like to answer Representative Bates' question. Both state associations are asked to put forward names for appointments. They have both put forward names. No ODOC nominee has been ever picked by the governor, to my knowledge. As a general rule, the members of the board don't really know. I mean, until this came up at the last hearing, I couldn't have told you who was a CAO member, who wasn't, because it doesn't really matter. What matters is whether or not they're a good board member. But so we consequently, of course, never have asked an ODOC member to leave a board. We had a board member be asked to resign by the governor's office for inappropriate behavior, the details of which you folks could get if you so choose. But that was at that point was a CAO member. Currently now is an ODOC member. That answers your question. Amen. Are there any questions that came up from the testimony that I can answer from a board perspective? There were lots of things mentioned in terms of potential conflicts of rule of interest and things like that. Can I answer any of those questions? Or
well, Senator Mesley has an issue.
Just not an issue. Just a very quick question. There's 100 members of ODOC. How many members of the other association? I assume that not everyone belongs to this.
Right. I believe they estimate they have about 250. The majority of doctors in the state are not aligned with any state association.
Representative Bates.
Just one last question. I think I heard that the Chiropractic Association has members of ODOC in leadership positions, and they can
past make, members, yes, mm-hmm.
And they can make recommendations to the governor
they certainly can
for members of the board.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So they have a voice to that channel.
Absolutely, and through their own association, yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the room that wishes to give testimony on these two bills? We'll close the public hearing. And do we have any housekeeping issues?
A couple things real quick, Madam Chair. Early on in this meeting, I mentioned House Bill 2241, which removed the Veterinary Board from the Health Division. I have copies of that bill here now for you if you'd like a copy of that. Also, just a reminder that there's no subcommittee meeting scheduled for tomorrow, and then on Monday we'll have the Health Licensing Office.
And I understand that our binders are available on the Health Licensing Office. And having no further business before the committee, we will adjourn and we'll reconvene Monday morning at 8:30.